This is a lecture by L. Ron Hubbard given on the 5th of July, 1959. The title of this lecture is How to Conduct an HAS Co-Audit and Why. This lecture is 49 minutes long. Reproduced by Golden Arrow Productions.
Hiya. Well, I want to talk to you now about the HAS co-audit. Here we've gotten down to the last lecture of this Congress, and I'd like to talk to you about HAS co-audit. Would you like to know how one of these is put together?
Yes.
Well, the title of this lecture could be How to Run an HAS Co-Audit Course and Why. How to Run One and Why. Now, I'm going to give you all the gin in the next 51 minutes. You won't have to attend the course, nothing, because you'll know everything there is to know about it, won't you? You'll know everything there is to know about it. So I might as well talk about something else. Matter of fact, it's a grave temptation to talk to you about victims, because there were two or three people, after I made that crack, everybody said in the audience, no, I'm not a victim. And there were two or three people walked out back, and one of them asked John, what's he mean, this business about being a victim? Well, what's he mean about, am I a victim? Boy, you sure are. Everybody's a victim. Well, that's about the way it adds up. Everybody's a victim. But the way to keep from being a victim is to get over on the other side of the communication formula at cause and punish people. And before you can come off obsessive, you have to go through and get out of excessive. Get the idea? Or you don't. Cause, distance, effect. Bill, distance, Joe. Bill and Joe got their postulates mixed up about 73 trillion years ago. So Bill says to Joe, "Arr!" And Joe says, I'm a victim. You're victimizing me, and you know very well I can't die, that I have to die slowly, and I'm going to set an example right here and now to show you how horrible it is to die and what a terrible thing you've done to me and how I didn't deserve any part of it. Service facsimile, we used to call it. He says, at no time do I deserve any of these "rawr" you're giving me. Of course, as a matter of fact, he's really standing back here saying, So, Bill, distance, Joe. Bill punishes Joe. Joe shows Bill that he mustn't punish Joe by saying pain, agony, grief, upset. And Bill is supposed to say, and usually does, oh heavens, I shouldn't have done it. Pain is real. Maybe I don't feel any pain, but other people obviously do. Look at Joe over here having such a horrible time. He says he has terrible agonies now that I've looked at his chest. Mystery enters in. He's already individuated to a point that he's not quite sure what really goes on over here at Joe. He's not quite sure whether Joe hurts or not. So he says, well, I don't know. I don't know. I probably shouldn't have done it. It certainly upset him. But this thing, pain. This thing, he says he has bad chest pains. Well, I never have bad chest pains. I wonder what it's like having bad chest pains. So one day, Bill is here, and Pete comes along. And now it's Pete, distance, Bill. And Pete says, "Rawr!" And Bill over here says,
How do I get out of this? I want to upset that guy somehow or another. How do I upset him? That wonderful, wonderful act that, what was his name now? Joe, put on. So he says, oh, you shouldn't have done it. You killed me. It hurts. It hurts? Hey, by God, I do feel something, right? He's inadvertently made the postulate necessary to hurt thereafter in that area. Now, Pete, he says, you know, that was pretty serious. A little while later, he calls around and he says, is Bill there? No, Bill's sick. Bill's what? Sick. It's a new word. Says he's got horrible pains in his chest, and the doctor, that's a new beingness he had to invent, says that he is probably crippled for life and there's no treatment for it. Now, Pete doesn't know that was Bill talking on the phone with another voice. And Pete says, chest hurt? And just because I said, like that, and the chest hurts and so on. Gee, I must be pretty powerful. I can just say, rah, the guy, and the chest hurts. Must be pretty powerful. So, Mabel now comes along. Mabel comes along, and she, some time before, had a little bit of a glare fight, you see, with Pete. And Pete kind of came off second best. He finally was the one that looked away. There was another girl over someplace to distract his attention, but he figured he lost, and Mabel is very sure that he lost. See? So she, unfortunately, comes up just about the time when he's standing here feeling that way, see? And he says, wow. Mabel says, what's the matter? He says, and she says, what's that, a new word? And he says, and she says, that's cute. And Pete says, now see here, Mabel, you're supposed to get a bad chest pain. She says, where? Just in the chest. Here. And Pete says, now you've done it. Says, Mabel, you've invalidated me. And now I'm sick. And that's the way it goes. I hope you'll excuse my using so many scientific examples. But this in short is this back and forth play of being the victim. That's being a victim. Now the question is, who's the victim? The fellow who committed the overt act, or the fellow the overt act was committed upon? Well, that in itself is quite a mystery. But somewhere up the line, you'll get run on that process, and you'll find out which really was the victim. It's worth knowing. actually bad luck, self-invalidation, psychosomatic illness, temporary illnesses, stuck postulates, all kinds of things, more or less come out of this weird play that goes on the track. And don't think it ceased to go on some time ago and just traveling on automatic. Just watch the people as they meet on street corners and say, "Row!" at each other. Still going on, they still play this game. It's an interesting game, except they get caught in the game, then forget that it's a game, and then they get real sick, and then they want to be well, and then they want to die, and then they find out they really didn't want to die, but now they've made the postulate to die, so now they have to go on living, even though they are in the process of dying. Yeah, everything equals everything by that time, and they've had it. Now, in an HAS co-audit course, you can let Bill, Joe, Pete, and Mabel recover from a few of these playful games. And let them get all set, but a trifle wiser, that maybe it's better to get a show on the road and get a cooperation going and get a culture straightened out than to stand around on street corners going, "Rawr." Maybe there's something else to do. And this should enter into the picture sometime or another in the career of any planet. That it hasn't is very well evidenced in your bank. There's always a new cycle can start, however, and this looks like a good one to start. Might as well start here. We are already having difficulties trying to plot up HCO comm centers which can do an interplanetary system interconnection and that sort of thing. HCO secretaries will probably be very upset trying to establish what a proper uniform is, because the HCO secretaries on XB-37 only have fins. You get the idea. But they'll get these major problems resolved. Factually, it's very interesting how many civilizations there have been that have gone up in smoke. And you should also be aware of this interesting fact, that they all go up in smoke just about the same way this one's going up in smoke, or they have been for some time. They do an interesting job of smoking. Should be signs around in these planets say, "No smoking." Now, the general situation on the whole track has been a dwindling spiral. And it keeps dwindling and dwindling and dwindling. These moments of a spring up of civilization and its expression in some kind of a mechanical culture are more and more rapid. In other words, we get a culture built much more quickly these days because everybody starts remembering things that he has told himself he mustn't remember because it's so painful, and that's why nuclear physicists are in such bad shape. They're trying desperately to remember things which they have carefully blotted out with nice somatics so it won't happen again. And then they're obsessively remembering and doing the things which they have to do that they know very well they better not do. And it cripples them up pretty badly because of the game of they shouldn't have done it, they would have done it, and so forth. But, for instance, I don't think I'm stringing a fairy tale, but there was a couple of 100,000 years ago a planet not too distant from this planet, but in another system, which had almost exactly the same civilization as this planet. Almost exactly. It had the same brownstone fronts. It had the same fire engines. The airplanes had just a little bit bigger cockpits. They had battleships. And finally, the battleships started firing electronic weapons and so forth. The battleships looked just the same. And they had a war that looked amazingly like World War II. Only trouble was, right there toward the end of that war, somebody developed an A-bomb, and then the war kind of fizzled out for a little while and remained undercover, and then somebody got mad at somebody else, and some Pete somewhere never having been able to make his postulate stick, and being very sick indeed, said, "Well, I'll get even for all the times that Mabel and Bill and Joe have been abusing me," and he pushed the button. And that was the end of that society. It was quite an interesting society. If you trace back on some of your PCs, or if you trace back on the track, you may have come through the society on that route. But everything got developed here with great rapidity, because all they were doing was doing a duplication of what they had in that society. And it's perfectly true what these fellows were saying. Mechanically, a scientist is always saying, it's all been thought of before. Well, he shouldn't say that everything has been thought of before, but certainly it's true that most of the gimmicks, washing machines, refrigerators, electronic weapons, and all this sort of thing, that he is now building are just about as new as Model T's. See? He's even using the same designs. Why does everybody agree that modernistic furniture is modernistic furniture? Ask yourself that question. Some artist springs up with a design and he says, it's all going to be this way and the lounges are going to be this way and we're all set. Everybody says, that's right, that's modernistic, that's correct. Well, this must have been agreed upon someplace. People spring up and they draw some circles and some jagged lightning and throw a small red spot into the middle of the canvas and they say, art. And a whole bunch of people say, art. And a whole bunch of other people say, art? They must have been fighting on it at some place else to have such an agreed upon, drawn up sets of sides on this. It's quite interesting that these political games just keep going on and on. Now, I'm not trying to sell you anything on the idea of past life. I don't know why you'd have to sell anybody on the idea that he was himself. But I will tell you that there have been awful long periods between the blow-up and the next culture. There's nothing to work with, nothing to do, nobody to talk to. You even get such things as genetic lines going, where you're picking up clams and birds and anything. Come on up the track and make some kind of a blueprint so as to excuse it when you finally start mocking up human bodies. When you start tracking somebody on the genetic line, make awful sure which time. Which sequence of beach weight on the edge of you are spotting. Because they've done it, and they've done it, and they've done it, and they've done it. They build it all up, blow it all up, then what wall, what planet, and then gradually get in, start to build life form somehow or other, get it worked up some kind of a level, get it speeded up and so forth, blow it up, and here we go again. This is a cycle of action that has been going on here for some time. Actually, truthfully, nobody wants the thing to happen. Nobody wants this thing to take a nosedive. But they've already made too many postulates when they didn't have anything to live with, that is, between cultures. I don't want to die. What's the use? The devil with it. There's nobody to talk to. There's nothing to do. There's no constancy, nothing of the sort. Why should I want to go on living? They get something that they want to live for. They could even be at such a state that merely having something to live for would be enough to kick the bucket. See, it immediately go into the second postulate of die. The fellow says, boy, I really got something to live for, and now boom. See, it's the first, second postulate to slide into. You owe it to yourself, to your own knowledge, cultural background, to actually take a look at the fabric of cultures and their sequence and cycles, and the role that people that you run into every day who are playing the game, I've never lived before, I'm brand new, I'm fresh, I'm just a little baby from God's own breath that has just come along and perfectly innocent, and here I am, and please explain to me why they can all get measles. And why, when you run out electronic implants, it cures measles. Measles are a type of radiation disease. And radiation plays a considerable function in measles, as goofy a disease as measles is. Measles and radiation are associated. So that in presence of a great deal of fallout, you get an awful lot more measles. There are records to this effect. And running out fallout, you knock out measles. How come all these bodies agree so thoroughly on how they should act and go through these various symptoms? How? Well, they didn't get together when they were dear little innocent babies and get it all agreed upon, let me assure you. They've been there before. That's for true. If anybody wants to buy as illogical a mystery of I have never lived before, but somehow or other have instincts, and have to account for the totality of the universe as having been constructed by some being of gargantuan dimensions with a long beard who rested Sunday, actually, if they stay in this state of ignorance forever, they perfectly deserve to knock out of their heads at death and go and try to find heaven. That must be an interesting search. I ran one PC one time that had been banging around looking for heaven for several hundred years. He was convinced utterly. He'd been a believer. He had been a good boy. He paid his tithes, put his nickel on the drum. He'd been good, man. He'd been good. When he kicked off, he says, well, they got a billet all reserved for me. They got some pearly gates, and all they're going to do is throw these pearly gates wide open. And I'm going to walk in, put a number on my chest, and be happy forevermore, strumming upon a tuned harp. I hope it'll be tuned. And he looked, and he looked, and he looked, and he looked, and he looked. This is a true story. And he finally found out that he couldn't find it. He decided he couldn't find it. So you know what he postulated? That he must not be able to find it because he didn't deserve it. And when he decided on that, he decided he'd better go find where hell was. And that was a lead pipe cinch. Very funny. We ran out the engram of him ducking into a volcano, going Aniten and winding up in a baby. It's quite interesting. This is an interesting example of the mishmash of cultural misinformation which goes around. Fairy tales are nice, but there is a time when you can get old enough so that you no longer have to believe them or be told them. The best way, easily, to let people find out what the score is, find out a better orientation of things, the best way that you could do it would be to let them look into their own paths, their own existences. Don't you think so? That way, you would get a very broad view of knowledge, wouldn't you? You see, it doesn't matter a doggone what I tell you. Doesn't matter a doggone unless it's true. But you'll only know totally if it's true if you, on inspection, discover that it is so. And I wouldn't tell you these things if you couldn't rather easily find out they were so. And I wouldn't expose you to the possible ridicule of having people invalidate you unless there now existed some means of letting them find out that it's so too. And that methodology is HAS co-audit. In the first place, if you've ever been around stupid people, you have discovered they break things. Their coordination and handling of life and other things isn't good. Isn't as good as it should be. They break things. They break up lives. They get a disorder going in which no order can exist. And if no order can exist, I assure you, no prediction can exist. And if no prediction can exist, how can anybody be happy, cheerful, or enjoy living, or do otherwise than say, well, I'll haul off and take another crack at it and hope that it'll be better next time. But hauling off and taking a crack at it next time found you where? Found these people where? Found them right back having to confront the conditions they didn't remedy when they still had some arms, legs, and heads to do it with. So they hauled off from the situation and says, I'll take another crack at it again. And when they take another crack at it again, they just drift along in the stream, and then it all gets too tough, and they say, I can't possibly confront this. Maybe if I back off and try to confront it again, why, then the next time I'll be in a better position to do something about it. So they knock it off and go along, and when they get up again, they're all set down. They're running in the same conditions, only it's worse now, and it's getting much worse. They say, well, it's too tough around here. Why don't I just pull off and take another crack at it? Next time, maybe I'll do something about it. And they pull back off, and they get all ready to do something about it, and somebody steps on a button, and it says, boom! Well, that's one more civilization they didn't get a chance to confront, isn't it? Now they can go off and idle somewhere and monkey around and hope that next time, when they have a civilization, they can do something about it. You know, there is a time on any traveling salesman's story when even he gets tired of it. Now, we are very fortunate in this period not to have to go through a pull-off and come back and find there's nothing there. We're fortunate. We have information and know-how. We can do something about it. Now, whatever we do about it, I know for sure that there's only one wrong action with regard to existing civilization. There's only one absolutely wrong action, even though absolutes are unobtainable. It comes awful close to being an absolute. And that is, do nothing about it. Whatever's right or wrong about the actions we take, certainly we know one that is real wrong. And that's do nothing. Because when you do nothing, you are refusing to communicate with the existing situation. You're not even communicating in that direction. You're just setting yourself up with another great big crack of mystery that'll creep up through the hundreds of thousands of years gradually getting civilization back together again. Just so that you can be twice as stupid that time. It's the way it is. I don't think there's been a time when culture at large was more accomplished technically and more stupid socially than the world culture we're living in at this moment. You know, practically every do-gooder organization's practically folded up. Did you realize that? There are very few of them really militant. People used to look to the ministers to go around and keep the morals straight. Well, people still think the ministers are around keeping morals straight. But we've been around and called on some ministers, and they're interested in something else. There are very few organizations, activities, or groups in the world today that are going ahead, circulating around, trying to keep show on the road. And there is no organization on earth today, except ourselves, who can do something about it. And doesn't that saddle us with an interesting responsibility? But for the sake, all the way up the dynamics, all the way up the dynamics, for our own sake, and the sake of the family, and the sake of the group, and the sake of mankind, and the sake of life, and so forth, all the way on up the dynamics as we go. The only wrong action we could take at this time is to do nothing. We have the know-how to do something about it. Actually, it's not even hard work. Part of our tools is HAS co-audit. Part of our tools. Now, for a long time, we thought, in the early days of Dianetics and Scientology, the old-timer remembers, the only thing we thought was vitally necessary was some technology. We just thought if we knew some processes and if we could assess people or diagnose people properly, get the engram necessary to resolve the case, and then run it any old how, but if we could apply the right technology to this thing, then we had it made, and the only extra ingredient that anybody needed was guts. This let some lady auditors out, because ladies aren't supposed to have guts. But I will say, in many instances, I've seen lady auditors with more guts than men. Now, the truth of the matter was, that was about as far as we went. We found out this wasn't entirely what we needed. We needed skills and drills to train auditors so that they could go forward with the technology. Technology continued to advance, but then we got skills that made it possible for us to train auditors much better. They could do a much smoother job. And that became part of actual technology. And then we found out that to disseminate information and to handle things and keep things squared around, we actually did need some kind of central control which was orderly. In other words, that the communication lines were orderly, that there was a place that administration could be done and dissemination of information and a crossroads sort of thing and research could be stacked up and put in file drawers. We needed this kind of a thing. And each time we found the existing technology or know-how didn't exist. We had to invent that. So we went ahead and invented a thing called organization. Today, I don't know how these big organizations run. Somebody would cynically say they don't. They're probably right, but they do get some things accomplished. But at what cost? It's a cost we can't afford. As a result, we had to learn about organization. And these two things now come together in HAS co-audit. It isn't enough to know just how to audit. It isn't enough to know just how to assess. You also have to know how to organize a group of people and assess and how to direct their skill in auditing, or lack of skill. When you get that all the way up, bang, you've got a fairly finished product. Oddly enough, an HAS co-audit course or co-audit activity is as successful as an individual can organize, administer, and instruct, and supervise muzzled auditing. It's all of those things together. Don't shortchange any one of them. Because you may be able to handle individuals and get them to auditing like mad and then fall flat on your face because you see no necessity to have somebody at the door with an invoice machine. Horrible thing to introduce suddenly into the scenery of all sweetness and light, you see. You say, well, I'm all doing this for the best of all possible good, and I'm doing this for good and for mankind, and I'm doing this for the third dynamic, and I'm doing it for the third dynamic, and all of a sudden your little kid walks up to you and says, Daddy, can I have a nickel? And you say, go away, son, I'm not doing this for the second dynamic. And the bill collector comes around and he says, you know, your light box out back there, you know, out back of the house where you have a light box, you know, that light box back there? You say, yes, yes, because I've just turned it off. And you say, well, I'm not working for the first dynamic, so I haven't got any money to pay your light bill. An imbalanced dynamic activity will fail every time. A fellow who is doing it all for the first dynamic, he never wins. He'll apparently win for a little while, and then he'll start caving in. He didn't see enough of the third to be able to understand it, and he's created himself finally into a total paranoid mystery about what it's all about. First dynamic only, first dynamic. Get a quick buck, first dynamic. This boy, if I thought that way, wow, we just never would get any place. But similarly, if I never thought about the first dynamic at all, I wouldn't have had enough money anywhere to have written out a check to get an airplane ticket to come over and talk to you people. Isn't that correct? It takes a balanced look. The first, the second, the third, the fourth, fifth, sixth, and seventh. And when you find out what it is, the eighth. Takes a balanced look. A fellow who says, I myself could get clear totally and never clear anybody else, the awful lonesome. He could do it, technically, he could do it. Those would certainly be awfully unpopulated cloud nines he'd be sitting on. Well, he'd thank anybody that even came up and told him he was supposed to strum a harp by that time. Because he'd be totally alone. Did you ever walk out of a Scientology group or a Scientology organization into the, quote, outside, unquote? Yeah. You know, the first time I ever did that was 1950. I was down in some town or another, Aberee by the Pacific, they call it. and I had a whole lot of social engagements I was supposed to keep. After all, down in that town, why, I used to write movies and things and do other things and alongside of people that would have told me I was crazy if I was spending my money on research. They didn't even know I was. But I'd take their big fat paychecks home and buy some equipment or pay the rent on an office that was sitting out somewhere else that nobody knew about. When the Los Angeles Foundation was rolling along, I had to go out and keep a lot of engagements one way or the other with these old pals from back in the 30s and so forth, and it would have been a horrible thing for me to refuse. And I went out and I saw a lot of them, and I was staying out at the ranch houses and that sort of thing, and I remember teaching one very nice-looking... There was a high spot. I mustn't paint a dismal picture. I remember teaching Susan Hayward jiu-jitsu. Yeah, I've lived. Anyway, aside from that one bright island, I was gone out and away from the Scientology organization for several days. I didn't even show up around there. And I couldn't figure out what was the matter with me. You know, I was driving down the street, and I was going back to the foundation, and everybody and everything was in trouble, you understand. It was just appetite over tin cup in all directions. And I got a terrific sensation of being very thankful because I was going home to some people I knew. It was the funniest feeling, and I see that you too have experienced it. It's communication, an ability to communicate, and it's also a closer, it isn't that you speak Scientologies, it's that you are talking to people who can talk to you. You have come closer to being able to be somebody and something and be yourself more naturally and be understood better in a Scientology group. I didn't know that this was quite as observable as it is to the outside. I was riding on a Deluxe Pan American something or other with a detachable Bombay bar. And I was talking to a Navy admiral about his troubles and trying to convince him that he shouldn't come to work for me. He wanted to resign or something of the sort, and I already had one admiral working for me. And they're not bad, they're expensive. And we were chattering back and forth about this. And we weren't talking about Scientology or Dianetics or anything of the sort. And finally, a couple of guys that were across the aisle had been sitting there solemnly guzzling their rum, you know. And one of them leaned across and he said to me, he says, "Are you a philosopher or something?" And I said, "Well, I'm something." And here and there, somebody answers up on this. Every once in a while, somebody in the society looks for a moment at a Scientologist, and they say, "There's something different about this man. He's doing something different. He's doing something different. Wonder what he's doing. Sort of curious." You know, and then they go into total mystery and go off someplace else. But they do notice the difference. And I was completely amazed to find that a member of the St. Hill domestic staff, it's a very small domestic staff, but he hadn't been on the post very long, and I heard him learnedly saying, he's not a Scientologist, and he was learnedly saying to a fellow who was just being hired, "You'll find that Scientologists are much easier to get along with than people." Well, it's very funny, but over the years I have seen Scientologists and Dianeticists get better off and come up the line further and things get done a little more easily and gains being made up along the line. Actually, they're being made now faster and faster. And I'm real proud of the advances people have made. There isn't any reason why more people couldn't make the same advances, and we couldn't have more of a society to talk in and associate in and to communicate in. There isn't any reason why we shouldn't. There isn't any reason why we shouldn't turn the island into the sea, you see? The general plan of operation today works on all dynamics. If we can run an HAS co-audit or assist in the running of an HAS co-audit, or be part of the team of forward motion in any way we can, or in any role we can, we are basically starting a great big circular action whereby people getting better will contact people who will get better, who will contact people, and it'll all roll around, and in the final analysis you will see that the gain social-wise is tremendous. And right now, I have positive evidence that where Scientologists exist, the actual culture level goes up, just a small amount. It's sort of as if society gets people in it that they can't really be found listening to them. But while they're looking that way, they're listening that way. And you actually get an increase in brightness and so forth as a result of it. A British Scientologist took a job not long ago with a school just to see what was happening. And didn't do anything very active, processed one of the little boys there. The school was run by a psychiatrist or something. And the net result was to blow up the school. She only worked there 2 weeks. She only asked a very few questions. And that was it. People got so upset that anybody would dare to ask questions of that character. And the children who were around in the school became suddenly brave enough to tell their parents how the school was being conducted. And that was that. And yet there was no intention on the part of this Scientologist to blow it all up. Just thought I'd go over and help them out, you know. But she just put too much order in too fast and it went boom. But I'll let you in on something. They go boom as fast as they are bad. As fast as their intentions are way out of order with the dynamic, so are they vulnerable. Now, nobody's trying to destroy this civilization. The only thing we're trying to do is get the people who would destroy it up to a point that they don't have to. And if we simply made the grade that far, we would make the grade. But it isn't actually necessary to clear every person on Earth to have a sane Earth. One Scientologist appearing in one area makes some slight difference. No matter how many thousands of people or millions of people are in that area, he'd make some slight difference. Now, all you got to do is put some more in that area to make a considerable difference. And if you got up into real percentages, like, 20, 25%, something on this sort, you'd change the whole works. And you wouldn't, the way the slave masters are saying today that you would, have a world of slaves handled by a world of people who were clear and therefore were directing everybody like robots. That's their idea. That's their idea. You'd have instead a bunch of people, although they didn't quite know what was going on, would suddenly have some confidence in what could go on and that things would go along a little bit better, and it'd take the edge off of the whole anxiety picture. A tremendous gain could be made in any neighborhood by starting an HAS co-audit, no matter how small. The positive gold that we get is simply a better world. If you'll settle for one, you'll have one. All you've got to do is start work in that direction. No matter how crudely, no matter how inexpertly, just start in that direction and we'll all wind up there. And that's what I would like to do. How about you? Thank you.